Outside of the Virtual Hardwood, it's the NLRC Podcast, episode number 335. Andrew with you once again. I am Andrew in our forum, and Andrew NLRC on Twitter. I'm joined by Derek, also known as Deeper3 in the forum, and Deeper384 on Twitter.
Happy to be here, and happy to talk more about NBA 2K21 and the new news and the gameplay trailer and all of this fun stuff. So
we speculated last week there'd be a bit more than a trickle of news, and it looks like there'll be more coming in the near future as we are, well, now we are less than a month away. We talked about that last week, that we were coming up on a month away from the release of NBA 2K21 current gen. And yeah, we're just about, 3 weeks away from it now when this is coming out, and we have a trailer. That's about it.
Yeah, I think that's the frustrating part, is the fact that, you know, the game comes out on September 4th, and we don't have true gameplay footage. We have flashes of gameplay in scenarios that they want us to see, for the good or the bad. And it's not true 5-on-5 gameplay footage. So you can't really gauge, you know, what it really looks like. I think one of the things with this most recent gameplay trailer is you can tell it's basically 2K20.5. Like, you can tell that the gameplay is, and the graphics are basically the same, that it's going to have, obviously, they hinted at new features, new teams possibly, maybe even new leagues represented and stuff like that. But, you know, you saw the slide, like Lillard sliding into a shot. So you can see that the foot planting still isn't strong. A couple of the dribbling moves look kind of, you know, like herky jerky, kind of like, you know, the dribbling system still looks like it's the same from 2K20. And so I'm not, and the graphics, like I said, look very much the same. So I'm not expecting anything much different than 2K20.
No, and that seems to be the general consensus. It is getting towards the end of the generation. Next gen is looming. The current gen version, as we mentioned last week, has been confirmed to have been outsourced to another studio, much the same way that NBA Live 08 and 09 were. The last gen versions of those games were for EA back in the day. So we're not surprised, and we did anticipate this. I think we touched on it last week, and certainly before the call this week, you and I both said to each other, yeah, we knew this was coming, and I think a lot of people did.
Yeah, and I think there's a couple positives to take out of it. For those who liked the NBA 2K20 gameplay and who were on PC, they're going to have the ability possibly to use the tools that Luya made, right? And, you know, all the tools that were made for 2K20 on 2K21. And it may be a quick start to that modding scene. And remember, for the first 3 or 4 months before the PS5 comes out, this is what people are going to be playing. So I think that it's going to be some nice exposure to the modding, for the modding community, because all eyes are going to be on, you know, that this version of the game, the PS4, Xbox One version, PC version and whatnot, and they're going to be able to, you know, really show off their work and stuff. So my biggest thing is added content is great and depth is great, but I was hoping for some tweaks in the gameplay. And while we don't know we don't know if it's the case yet that there's been nothing really changed, I'm fairly certain that it's going to be basically, you know, a lot like 2K20.
It seems a pretty good guess. And certainly it sets the expectations, I think, at a reasonable level, because if you're expecting more from current gen at this point, and certainly with next gen coming out this year and outsourced to another studio, it is possibly a roster update more than any other game we've seen. Maybe there'll be some new stuff here and there, like you say, new content that is yet to be seen, although we do have a few glimpses that suggest that the current gen version will benefit from that. Something I've seen in the forum, our forum that is the idea that the PC version is basically going to be DOA, that it's going to be pointless, no one's going to get it. I see where they're coming from with that, because it certainly is a disappointment to a lot of people. I think people did anticipate the next-gen version being a port, even though we went into why it was unlikely and why it can also be a good thing in previous shows. But, I mean, I'm sure there will be people who boycott the PC version, and in fact, So it's quite certain that will happen with quite a few people, which I understand, and I'm not saying that people are wrong for doing that. But at the same time, I do think people will pick up the PC version of 2K21. simply so they have a new game to play. It'll have new content, new things in my team. If they're involved in the online scene, they'll want to go to the game, as we've said before, where most people are playing and most people do upgrade year to year these days, not like the old days where a lot of people would stick with an old game and continue to update it. I think the modding community will move on in the large part. Maybe not as much considering the situation, but I think people will still be moving on to 2K21. If there is new content as far as some new legends or college teams and things like that, as hinted at in the trailer, then those are going to be assets that people want to work with as far as modding 2K21, if nothing else. So I think people will actually move on, and maybe some people will skip it, but at the same time, if you're not getting a PlayStation 5 or an Xbox Series X and you want the latest game and you're on PC, I think people are still going to get it.
Well, there's a couple things. Modding exposure has exploded over the last year. From Dom2K, from the Forbes articles, Operation Sports, all the screenshots and videos, all the articles being written about mods and stuff like that. I don't think that there's going to be that many people boycotting, number one. Number two, I think that, if anything, their PC sales could increase. I know that sounds crazy, but I think it's PC is incredibly niche as it is. And I think that all of that modding exposure, and all of, you know, so many more people being aware of the capabilities, what you can do on PC. I think that the first couple months of them selling the PC version, I think they're going to do very well in comparison to past years. So maybe, we'll see. The other thing that I think is funny, and I think you might look forward to this as much as I do, is all the PS5 mods that are going to be coming out for the PC version. You know, like, the remember when 2K14 came out for the PC, and then they obviously saw what they were doing on Xbox One and PS4. And for those who don't remember, you know, or don't know, or are new to the podcast, the NBA 2K14 for the PC was a PS3 port. But then you had all of these globals and these lighting mods and these graphics mods calling it, you know, next-gen mod.
Yep.
You know, yeah, PS4, yeah. Nanotechnology.
I was going to say, I've forgotten what he called it.
Nanotechnology. And then he former was former member of the
community who was liked to post pornographic pictures when he was upset that nobody was giving him attention, and basically made himself very unwelcome in the community, and then and couldn't understand why. And he even posted something saying, "I got banned from some of the other community," and like, well, maybe it's not them or us. Maybe it's you. But yeah, that nanotechnology. Contributor. Yeah.
That's the thing. He was like originally a contributor who made some globals that people liked, right? And then like he went off the rails. I don't understand what happened. But yeah, I look forward to the mods that, you know, oh, here's the next gen scoreboard mod, or here's the lighting mod that emulates PS5, and all the advertising that modders like to do for their work. It's going to be interesting.
Patreon exclusives. That's a thing that we're dealing with these days. But that was a thing with 2K14, and you're right, I hadn't thought about that, but it's definitely going to be a thing in the modding community, because we did see a lot of that last time. And I suppose if people can make that version look a little bit more like the next gen, but it remains to be seen how much of a next gen jump there is. At the same time, maybe there will be different lighting. Well, we know, is there going to be any effective sweat effect mods? I mean, that's what it's all about, apparently.
Well, Lagoa will be the first person to jump on that. I look forward to it every year. I've used his globals, by the way, you know, on 2K13, 2K14, and whatnot. And I use his global also for a bit on 2K17. And on 2K19. He always checks the sweat first and sees how the progressive sweat is working, and then, you know, starts working on a global to increase that experience. So I'm fully expecting Lagoa to jump on that.
The scope of our modding community is pretty impressive when you think about it.
Yeah, we're versatile. The modding community is very versatile. You have people that work specifically on courts. You have people that work specifically on faces, some on stadiums. You have people like Lagoa that work on sweat. You have people that work on, you know, adding extra teams, you know, fixing people's hair and all of that stuff. Like, it's a really versatile community. And, you know, you name an edit, and usually the community, like a possible edit of the game or creation, and usually somebody in the community is doing it.
And I think that's why people will take to 2K21 despite the disappointment, despite the fact that it is a glorified roster update. We say that now. There might be some more stuff to it, but it is obviously, again, the end of the generation. We're getting that port of the current gen version, which also has the benefit of not having to wait until the holiday season to get a PC version. That is something that a lot of people have overlooked, as we've said in previous shows. They've overlooked the fact that if we were getting the next-gen version, then we wouldn't be getting it until holiday season. Of course, that's when the new NBA season is going to be starting up. That's the whole thing. It's a very strange situation this year. So it's very strange, not just the switch in generation, or the launch of a new generation, but also what's happening with the NBA restart and the shutdown due to the pandemic and everything. It's very strange times, but it is coming together. We do have the trailer, and getting back to the trailer, as you said, it is basically NBA 2K20.5, the way it looks. Not very surprising at all. The cinematic angle, so we're not really seeing anything new as far as raw gameplay is concerned, except for that one little bit with Damian Lillard, who is the current-gen cover player, of course, with the new shot meter, which is getting some attention from people, as you would expect, which also hints at some new shooting mechanics or adjusted shooting mechanics. And that's something that I brought up. And there was a post in our forum that mentioned, you know, that there are other things apart from the shot meter's appearance, but which I agree, but it's not the appearance of the shot meter. It's the way that they've done it and what it might mean for the way the shooting mechanics work. Because as I've said before, Derek, whether you play with the shot meter on as I do or off as you do, the shooting mechanics remain the same as far as release point and early and late releases and how that all works. So if they've changed that, that might be another thing that people have to adjust to in 2K21. And if they've done it that way, it's probably going to be very similar on next gen as well. So it's worth noting.
There's a couple things. And before I touch on that real quick, remember the not to like dovetail out of control here, but do you remember, you know, we had a 50-game season in 98-99 for the NBA, and you talked about how the next year NBA season is going to be starting up in, like, December or something. Do you think they're going to do another 50-game season? Because it's not like they haven't done it before. So what they do is they do, like, another 45, 50, or 55-game season, a shortened season, and then just get the seasons back on track? Is that what you think they're going to do?
Yeah, that's interesting. Or are they just going to cram the 82 games in? Because they did do 66 games when they started in December back in the 2011-2012 lockout. So that is possible. I hadn't really thought of that, but maybe that's what they're going to do. And again, how do you reflect that on the virtual hardwood as well?
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I was thinking, and I think that if I'm the league, that's probably the route I go. I'm probably going to try to do it like a 50-game season and eliminate constant back-to-backs and stuff like that, and, you know, possibly stars getting injured and whatnot. I think that would probably be the route that I would do if I'm running the league.
What are you going to do for 2K21's my league mode then, and my career? Do they even have a schedule for next year yet?
Exactly. And see, that's the thing. So how are they implementing – that's going to be interesting. Like, how are they implementing that in the game that we're getting next month? So yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, there's always the options of doing like 82 game or 50 game or 29 game or whatnot season. So it's not like those options aren't there.
And I mean, I suppose do they randomize it? Because and then when the new season comes out, do they patch it in? Because usually the schedule is worked out during the off season based on exciting rematches from the previous season, including of course the NBA Finals matchup. So it's really something that has to be worked out based on the previous season, which is in progress later than ever, due to the pandemic, of course. So it's going to be one of those things, another strange oddity. It's kind of a oxymoron there, or tautology, rather. It's a strange oddity of getting the schedule and everything done, because, you're getting this game coming out while the previous season is still going on. It really makes you think that perhaps the current-gen version should have been pushed back.
Yeah, exactly. And I think they did this smart, and we talked about this on a previous episode, because they have 3 to 4 months to promote and sell the PS4 and Xbox One versions of the game. I think this was smart. I think from a marketing perspective, I think that they're going to get a lot of people double dipping. I think this is going to be the most sales in 2K history. I think they're going to be the most profitable and make the most sales this year in early next year than they ever have in their history. So well, when it's all said and done, I think they did the right thing. And whether the schedule is right or not, people just want a damn basketball game, right?
Yeah.
They just want a basketball game to play. And now they get to double dip. So,
the price increase, isn't, if nothing else, is going to help out with that extra revenue as well. We'll get to that in a moment. But, yeah, that's something else.
Yeah, exactly. And people will pay it, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, people are going to pay it. As far as the shot meter goes, though, just to get back on track with that. So, Lillard, one thing that a couple people pointed out, and I noticed it, too, is that his form is incorrect on that shot. And so that's not really a good look to, it's like the starting promotion of your gameplay trailer. But, one thing is players losing their form and their shots looking unrealistic, whether it be on the move, or whatnot, or fading away from the basket. So that's been something that's been pointed out. And I do agree with that. His shot form isn't right. The other point of that is we talked about this. It doesn't matter what the shot meter looks like if the mechanics don't go with it.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
So, one of the problems that was with 2K20 is the fact that shots felt rushed. And most shots felt like it was almost impossible to find the exact release point because it wasn't consistent. And because there was no... The animation itself wasn't structured in a way that was smooth and felt good on the sticks. So they can say whatever they want. Oh, the shot meter. Oh, there's a bigger green window. Oh, and this and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, if the shooting doesn't feel good and it doesn't feel realistic and the mechanics aren't correct, then people are going to complain about it.
Well, looking at that shot meter, it suggests to me that there's going to be a bit more of a wind-up, for lack of a better word, it depends on the speed of how much the meter goes and the timing of the release, of course. But it looks like it's going to be a little bit longer than what they've been doing for the last 3 years or so. So that may or may not work out for the best. I do like the idea of there being that zone of the early-late release, of it being a high percentage zone and then a very small sliver for the perfect release. I think that, in theory, that sounds like a good way of handling it. It's kind of how they've been handling it in the past, but there's also been that nerfed a good release in NBA 2K18, if you recall, that a good release was basically a nerfed green release that only had a 5% chance. So in essence, you had a higher chance with a very late or a later early release than you did with a good release, which, and people trying to explain it to me as if I didn't understand. No, I understand it. I just think conceptually, the idea that early or late is being better than good is never a good look. So I get what they were going for, is trying to nerf the perfect releases for shooting percentages, but it felt very artificial. We saw a bit of that in 2K20 as well, I think, with a lot of the white releases, the all-white releases, as they're called. So I do like the idea of what they're going for. I hope it works. I hope that it's not too much of a long wind-up to match the animations. We saw that in NBA Live 19, with the length of the shot meter in NBA Live 19 being so long, especially when they adjusted the defense, or adjusted it so that green releases were easier to stop with defensive rotations, the CPU would rotate over very quickly, but it was very hard to get a green release because they would just stick to you like glue, and it would just take away the shots. Jump shots were, with the last patch of Live 19, pretty much impossible, and it was done for online, but against the CPU it just didn't work. So you need to have the right length, the right timing on your shot mechanics, and the feel, as you said, for it to work properly. And in theory, if the feel is good, then this approach to the shot meter could definitely work. But again, there's a lot of questions to be answered, and they'll only be answered when we get our hands on the game and actually start feeling how it feels on the sticks.
The bottom line is that people should be rewarded for shooting the ball correctly. Mm. And it's how they implement that reward and how much they, you know, without lack of better term, how they reward that person. Like, how do they reward the reward? They basically have to find the right balance where the person feels like they have control, but it's not like super overpowering. I've said this on prior podcasts before. I said, you know, I like using user timing without the meter on, and I feel like that is more challenging and a more sim approach as long as the game mechanics go with it, right? As long as the game mechanics make sense in that regard and make it a fully functioning you know, shooting system. So we'll see what happens. I'll always play that way. I'm never changing that. I'm never switching to real player percentage, and I'm never going to play with the meter on. One of the reasons why I don't like playing with the meter on, and you and I have talked about this in the past, one of the reasons I don't like playing with the meter on is because at that point you're taking your eyes off of the game, right?
Yeah.
Taking your eyes off of the defender. You're taking your eyes off of everything else, and you're focused on a meter. And if you're shooting like 80, 90 shots a game or whatever, if you're shooting like that many shots a game and you're not watching the action during those shots, I feel like you're missing out. You know what I mean? And it also gives like an artificial look to the game. And I want to play like I see it on TV. So I like having the meter off.
Absolutely. And it's an aesthetic choice as well as on top of everything else. Being that I play online, you don't need the meter. A lot of people are confident enough without it to do it. I like having it on for that that aspect of being online. To that point, though, we might have touched on it last week, but Mike Wong, Baluba, of course, did bring up the point, the idea of only having shots go in if they're green. What do you think of that? Because, I mean, whether you have the meter on or off, the mechanics are the same. Would you like it if shots only went in, because he was talking about taking a very hardline stance on it, if they hit the perfect release zone, anything else misses? Are you in favor of that, or do you think there needs to be a bit of wiggle room on both sides?
I mean, that's a terrible idea, in my opinion, unless, I mean, how big is the green zone?
Like, yeah,
I mean, if you're going to time layups, right?
Yeah.
Like, is that mean, think about the nightmare impact that would be, you know, as it is, layups are a nightmare in NBA 2K games because you're sucked into people constantly. You're missing way too many layups, more than they miss in real life, all of this stuff on the fast break and in the paint. So now you're going to make it so I have to time my layups, and at the same time, it will only go in if it's green. So how many, you know, what am I going to shoot 10% on the, you know, inside the paint? So yeah. I'm skeptical of something like that. I think that, you know, percentages do get lower when you're out of the green zone, but if you have a good look and you shoot it slightly off, that there should be a chance that it can go in, just like in real life.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, people finish on the way down in real life. People finish on the way up in real life. At times, people finish when they flick it. You know what I mean? So I think that those percentages are obviously a lot lower when you shoot it that way, but there is still a chance it can go in. So I think that would take away from some realism and control.
Yeah, ironically, especially when they're talking about making the game more enjoyable, to take such a hardline stance, I think would go very, very much counter to it. And to be fair, they're not doing it this year. It was an idea that he brought up with Agent 00 on that interview on NBA 2K TV. But yeah, I do agree that it would just be such a bad way of doing it. It takes away the realism, as you said, because players do hit shots when they're off balance, or it's not a great shot, but it's just, you know, by pure dumb luck sometimes, and you know, if you've played basketball, just flicking it up at the hoop and in it goes. But here's the other thing. If you're going to demand perfection on the release and everything like that, if you have to get a green release to go, if you're going to demand perfection from the input, your game also has to be perfect. And with all due respect to Baluba and the other people who work very hard on 2K, it is not a perfect game. And here's the other thing. If you're going to demand people be able to green release to make shots over and over again online, you need to have a game that doesn't have problems with lag spikes and other server issues. And frankly, that is not NBA 2K whatsoever. Obviously, you can't...
Yeah, no, I agree. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. I agree. I think the thing is that you can't try to make the game more fun and more balanced and then do a hard stance on that.
No, not
at all. Like,
that
doesn't make any sense. There's too many factors. Your game mechanically would have to be perfect, yep. Literally perfect. Yep. Your jump shots, your jump shot animations and your layup control and all of that stuff.
And shot timing, have to be perfect. Input lag.
Input lag, you know, playing
online lag, yeah.
And stuff like that, it would have to be perfect. You'd have to have a perfect server.
Yeah.
A perfect online system.
And you also can't. You can't.
Have to cut out all those two-man animations, Andrew.
You'd have to. Yeah, you can't do it.
You can't do it.
And here's so the thing, yeah. 2K servers, look, I'm trying not to be too negative or too snarky about this, but quite frankly, 2K servers are embarrassing for a game as successful as it is, for a company that is as big and wealthy as it is. The 2K servers are just, they just can't handle that kind of perfection. So if you have to get into, I mean, there's been so many times when I've had a green release online when I've, by again, pure dumb luck, I've lagged into it. You sometimes have to adjust for that lag. And it's different when you go online and offline, so it's all kinds of crazy and having to get the... Some people have to change their jump shots over the years between online and offline play. That's insane. And if you have to do that, you can't take that hardline stance. So I think maybe he was just floating the idea for competitive play, but I think that would be absolutely wrong. I think that takes away, as you said, the realism of shots not necessarily being perfect, but still good enough to go in, which is a thing that happens in the real NBA and indeed at all levels of basketball if you've ever shot a basketball at a hoop. And demanding a level of perfection, yeah, I think if they're considering that, then if they ever implemented that, I can see them patching it out within the first week or two, because I think just the backlash against the game, I've criticized 2K before for acquiescing to people who complain just because there's a learning curve, but I think that would be such a huge mistake that if they ever went that way, they'd have to change that pretty damn quick after release, because the backlash would just be incredible.
You know, the red flag, one of the red flags, and I think you can agree with this too, and listeners have probably noticed this as well, is people will post YouTube videos and they'll go on Operation Sports and talk about this too, and they'll say, you know, when you're creating your player, this is the release you need to go with because it's one of the only ones that feels good. That's a red flag right there, because it is. If you only have one or two releases when you're creating your player that you feel the motion is realistic and feels good and that you can get green releases or good releases the majority of the time, and there's that many choices though, you know what I mean? And there's only like a couple, that's a red flag. And that's the way it's been.
Why online in my career is so homogenized, because you have to have the same builds, the builds that are OP, the builds that work online, the animations that work, the animations that are going to get the results, the animations that feel good. So you can't even customize a player that makes the animations maybe look a little bit like your shooting style or stand out or something. You can if you learn the release, but again, because there is such a small amount of animations that are reliable, most of the time, yeah, like you say, you have to go with that, and it leads to these build videos and everything, which, look, I think that's great content and very important content for the community, but it also highlights the problem of how homogenized the game has become.
Right, exactly. And I think what happens, like you said, is that they talk about skill gap, right? What happens is you have players playing the same. It's almost like the now NBA, right? You have players online like going out there with similar shooting forms or the same shooting forms, and they're playing the same and they're trying to do all the same builds and stuff like that. The lack of authenticity, and in my opinion, that was in 2K20 as far as the dribbling and the customization around that and the player movement and all the things in the game that the gameplay gets in the way as far as skill gap stuff. I just don't think there was as big of a skill gap as there needed to be. And in my opinion, I don't think people were having that much fun online.
I can attest to that with my various articles and previous comments on
it all. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's absolutely true. Yeah. And they talk about the skill gap a lot, but the way it's implemented, I just don't see the skill gap, because it does come down to making these OP builds and picking the animations that you can abuse and tactics that you can abuse. The skill gap and the realism and by extension the fun hasn't been there. So I do think that approach would be such a bad idea. I do hope that was just something that he threw out there for discussion's sake, in which case it's fine to talk about. It's fine to throw out these ideas. It's when you implement bad ideas that's the problem. I mean, we can talk about anything. We can talk about replacing the NBA championship, the Larry O'Brien trophy in my league with a cup. We could talk about that. I mean, it's we don't have to do it, because it would be stupid. It would not be realistic to do, because it's supposed to emulate the real NBA. You can throw out any ideas you like. It's the ideas that you actually run with that are the problem.
Right, and when we start talking about NBA Live a little bit later, we can get into that.
Indeed.
We're talking about lamenting of the implementation of some of these ideas that never should have been implemented, so...
So as far as the trailer goes, I don't really have anything much more to say about it. I mean, it is, like you say, it's kind of 2K 20.5. Any improvements that we really see and feel we won't be able to really notice until we get our hands on the game, unfortunately. I'm sure we'll hear about some of those tweaks and adjustments and additions of content in the coming weeks, as far as developer blogs and everything, which they're really going to squeeze in, again, with it being just under a month away.
You know, I think you talk about additional content, and it looked like they dropped a couple hints in there. Like, you know, they did a Barcelona thing with like a big L, and it's Pau Gasol in the Lakers jersey, right? Mm. And he's looking at Marc Gasol in a Raptors jersey. And of course, you start thinking, you know what, this is they have the Mamba edition. This is the first game after Kobe's passing. You know, are they going to be putting in the 09-10 Lakers or 08-09 Lakers? Of course, overdue. You know, of course, Pau Gasol doesn't have the correct hair and whatnot as that he would for that season. It's like the most recent Pau Gasol, as you expect. I mean, we've talked about this before, about lack of authenticity and then just reusing faces with the same looks that they didn't have in prior years.
Yep.
And stuff like that. You know, they dropped hints on that. You know, we talked about college teams on a previous episode and like that fake article, but then, you know, you look at that and it looks like there may be a hint in the trailer about college teams.
We do need to follow up on that. I totally forgot that, as you say, yes, they have hinted at content, a new neighborhood for all. I mean, they're still going to have the same problems of the old neighborhood of running around a virtual world to visit shops and see advertising and everything that can be done in menus so much quicker, but it's going to be so much more faffing around in the virtual world of this virtual neighborhood. But for whatever, you know, for people who care about the neighborhood, or like the neighborhood, I should say, if you play My Career, you have no choice but to use the neighborhood, of course. It looks like there'll be a new neighborhood. There's a hint of a 2K Beach. Maybe they're going to bring back things like the Sunset Beach Ballers and things like that, different park affiliations. Possibly. That hasn't been confirmed. Maybe that's the hint of showing 2K Beach, or maybe it's just a detail in the background. Maybe you can have different... Maybe there'll be different neighborhoods based on park affiliation if they bring that back. Whatever the case may be, it looks like there will be a new neighborhood, so that is something that we can take to the bank, I suppose, or 2K can take to the bank with all the opportunities to spend money, real and virtual, in the neighborhood. There is, as you say, hints of new retro teams by showing Pau Gasol and the Lakers. There's the showing the players from around the world and mentioning where they're from, hinting at maybe some kind of international content or something like that. Or again, that could just be spotlighting how the game is global and how the game is going on, even though the pandemic has been affecting sports worldwide. I mean, it remains to be seen what that is. What that's meant to represent. I'm sure we'll find that out in the developer blogs over the next couple of weeks or so. But I think the thing that we can confirm is obviously the presence of college teams, because they did show a player in a Florida Gators jersey, and that came with the caption of My Career. So it looks like, if nothing else, the My Career story is going to have a college portion. Remains to be seen whether the college teams are going to be playable outside of that. But I'm guessing it's just going to be more a case of... has to guess at this point, I'm going to say that they're just part of My Career, but maybe instead of having just the 9 or 10 college teams from previous games, we've got 60 odd to choose from. That's what might have been hinted at before, and that's where people might have had some confusion about those details.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we had a feeling that the college game teams or whatnot would be implemented in some way because of the new license they struck with the NCAA, and the NCAA allowing also players to be, you know, compensated if they're for their likeness to be used. I don't know if they're going to have real college players in the games or if it's just going to be teams or whatnot. But you had a feeling they were going to implement that in some way, so that makes sense. I think one thing that has kind of been an elephant in the room, and I've seen a few people bring it up, NBA Live Girl brought it up, etc. You got to let people create women. If you're going to have the WNBA in the game, you need to have a creative player feature that supports people creating women.
Yeah.
You know, girls that are playing NBA 2K, women that are playing NBA 2K should be able to go in and create a woman. You know what I mean? And,
Live did it, right.
Yeah. But, you know, NBA 2K should have that feature where offline, you can customize those teams and, you know, create women and whatnot, and maybe create yourself and put yourself on one of the WNBA teams and stuff like that. Like, it's time. Like, just get that in there.
Yeah. So. they have mentioned there's going to be something for WNBA, or that WNBA fans are going to be, as when we touched on this last week, very happy to see what happens in next gen. So it remains to be seen what happens with current gen in that regard. But I agree, if they can get it on current gen, so much the better. If they definitely need to do that for next gen, it sounds like they might be doing something like that, or they're definitely dropping some heavy hints about it. But I definitely agree that's something to do, and Live has beaten them to the punch on that, of course. Live being in the state that it's in, it's not maybe not exciting to everybody that it's in that game, but the point is that it has been done. People were quite happy about it. Of course, you had the usual comments when it came out, but then a lot of people did create female players, the one players, to play with in the various court battles and things in NBA Live 19. So yeah, it's absolutely something that should be done. But as far as the college teams go, yeah, maybe that leak, maybe there was something to it. I mean, we did say that it was something to take with a grain of salt when we talked about that on episode, 331, 2, something like that?
Yeah, I think it was 330. But yeah, I think they said that, I think there were, that article probably wasn't real. I mean, they said 68 teams. That's definitely not going to happen. Mm. I think 68. I think that's too many, like, for them to implement in, you know, such a short cycle. My opinion is that they're going to have many represented, but not that many. So maybe some truth, but it was also clickbait.
And I also think that it's probably going to be more connected to my career than having a bunch of generic or fake players to be selected alongside the historical teams and current teams, etc., and the all-time teams and the decade all-stars and everything. It seems more likely to me that it's going to be a part of my career, because that's where we saw the college teams show up in the trailer, where it says my career and there's a my player wearing a Florida Gators jersey. So I think that's probably what it is. Maybe they've got their wires crossed. Maybe they just made something up off a rumor. They heard that little bit of college teams and decided to run with it either way. But again, this is why you do be very careful about reporting these details. But as we said at the time on that show, a lot of content creators will go with the clickbait because it does, unfortunately, yield results.
It got us talking.
That's true, yeah.
We talked about it on the show.
We are part of the problem, I guess.
Yeah, but at the same time, at least we weren't supporting it.
That's true. That is true. So yeah, with that, that sounds like we're getting some new content. The game, apart from that, is going to be pretty much the same. I'm not disappointed because I expected it. Much like the PC version being a current gen port, I saw it coming. I figured that was quite likely, and certainly as far as improvements with the very last game. Not necessarily the last game, but certainly probably one of the last games that's going to be made for this generation. I wasn't expecting huge changes, huge innovations. We might see a little bit else. We might get a lot of things in the developer blogs over the next few weeks that are going to promise great things. But I do think we're getting basically a dolled up NBA 2K20, which is disappointing in some respects. But at the same time, it's kind of the way how it goes with sports games, especially with the transition to a new generation.
By the time we talk again, I think we're going to have actual gameplay.
Yeah.
I do. I think that...
Or information,
I think that
at least.
Yeah, I think what's happening is by the time we talk again, there'll be only like 17 days or something like that before release. So I would be shocked if we don't get some more gameplay, you know, within the next week or whatnot.
I assume so,
It seems like...
Quite likely,
but
yeah.
I think it's kind of crappy for them to do such a early, hey, you guys can buy this, and then, you know, like when they did, and not have true gameplay out yet.
And it's
pretty crazy.
It's the way it's been with the previous season. The previous season in the last 5 years, maybe a bit more, probably especially since NBA Live has dropped off and 2K has just been able to really rule the roost with it. The previous season used to be very exciting back in the day, covering it for the NLSC, and even just as, you know, not just covering it, but just being interested in the upcoming releases as a gamer, it used to be very exciting to see what would happen, and you would get those details coming around the draft or the NBA Finals, and they'd just be really coming through every week. There'd be something new, and over the years, the previous season has just been whittled down. And yes, there is a different circumstances this year because of the pandemic and everything, and you know, as we talked about earlier in the show, but this is not a new thing. The previous season being whittled down to just a rush of information a couple of months out, or even a month out away from the release of the game, and of course pre-orders going up. Before this year, pre-orders would often go up around the NBA Finals, then we wouldn't hear anything about the game until August, and yet of course it didn't hurt the sales. Then again, you can pre-order right up until release, so it's who knows when they're getting all those pre-orders in. People might wait. But all the same, the previous season used to be this exciting event, and we'd be getting all this kind of stuff and things to sink our teeth into every week. And now it's not exciting. It feels very cynical because they know that people are going to sell buy the game. They know they're going to sell millions of copies and then get all the recurrent revenue. So, yeah, we just get this rush of information and with a month left for the game, and it doesn't have the excitement that it used to. And maybe we're getting older and cynical and jaded and whatever, but you see younger people saying it as well. So it's not just us being grumpy old boomers, Derek.
Well, a couple things. First off, I did pre-order it, and I ordered the regular edition. I didn't do the Mamba edition. And the reason why I did is because I'm on PC, and because I don't play my team, and I haven't since 2K15, and I don't play online, really. So, I mean, if I jump into my team, I also want to start from scratch and not get freebies.
Sure.
Not that they're freebies. It's another $40 I would have had to spend.
Good point, yeah. What's free is free. Air quotes.
Right, exactly. And no, I agree. I think part of it though is that we've become a little jaded with the series. It's gotten a little bit old. It's gotten a little bit, the excitement for the new games coming out isn't what it was, you know, back in 2K12 and 2K13 and even 2K14 and stuff like that when we felt better about the series. And I think that's the way a lot of people feel.
That's part of it.
Yeah, and I also think that 2K really truly understands the marketing angle of, hey, we don't have any competition here. People are going to buy a basketball game, and this is going to be ours, so we can wait. You know what I mean? They know that they can lose sales if they show something early that people don't like. I think that that definitely plays into it, and that's really sad because it really is kind of just preying on consumers. But there's a business to it. You know what I mean? There's a business side of it, and they want to make money, and that's how they choose to do so.
And we have a choice. We can vote with our wallets and not buy the game, but we still do. So it's again, we do become part of the problem. We perpetuate that that approach being viable by buying into it, literally.
Right. We're collectors, number one. Number two, both of us love basketball. Right, we like basketball, and we love video games and basketball. Even if the game isn't very good, we've talked about this. You and I, as insane as we are, we're sitting on Fox Sports Basketball 2000. That game is absolutely terrible, but you and I both have it in our collection.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
You know why? Because we love basketball.
It's interesting.
So that's, yeah.
Air quotes, interesting.
air quotes, exactly. I was at the GameStop yesterday because I wanted to pick up another game. And so I'm at GameStop, and I'm looking, and NBA 2K 14 through 18 on the PS4 is $2.99 each one of the games. They're that cheap. I think NBA 2K 15 was 99 cents.
Wow.
You can literally pick these up. You can get all of these games for $10 total, and you can have all of them. So, as a collector, when I see that, I didn't buy them because I already have them, but I just saw it. But, as a collector, if you, liked this gen of NBA 2K games, why wouldn't you drop a buck on a game like 2K16 or drop $3 on 2K17? It's pretty wild. And the guy, I almost felt it was insulting because one of the games I bought, my brother and I brought up MLB The Show 08, right? So I said, I wanted to get also the console version of it. So we picked up the PS3 version, and it was only $1. And it's a great game. And the guy behind the counter, he goes, some of these people want to play some of these outdated games. And just the way he said it, I found it insulting. It's do you understand that this game is still awesome?
Yeah.
I know that it's a 12-year-old game or whatnot, much games like NBA 2K8 and stuff. But these games are fun. You know what I mean? Maybe they don't have the graphics of some of the games nowadays, but if you want to talk about a couch, co-op experience or, a couch play experience and whatnot, these games still hold up. So just the way he said it. He's a younger kid.
Well, that's the thing. It's old heads, boomers, that kind of thing. I think people who haven't really gone through that nostalgic phase yet, they're still I can't believe I thought this game was great. And well, you were right sometimes about these games. And you and I, we can go back to games. You talked about one of your brothers can't go back so much and another one can, but you like I, are much more enthusiastic about going back to these old games. They are like interactive almanacs. That along with virtual hardware has become a phrase that I am very quickly overusing in articles, I will totally admit, but they are glimpses into the past. They are interactive almanacs for the NBA. You can go back and play it. And look, if you can go back and play Super Mario Bros. 3 on NES, I won't mention the other NES game that I always do, things like that, Donkey Kong Country, Grand Theft Auto 3, Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, all these games that hold up really well and that are so beloved classics, if you can go back and play those, why not a basketball game? I mean, yes, sometimes sports games don't age as well as other games. Things like NBA Jam, arcade games tend to, because they don't go for realism in the first place. But if you can go back and play a beloved favorite, what's wrong with that? And I think sometimes, as you say, if he was a younger person, then maybe they haven't hit that nostalgic phase yet and they're still keeping up with the times and everything. But, I mean, we've talked about it many on the show and we'll touch on it again, I'm sure, that you can go back to these classics and enjoy them. And also now we're starting to see that, as we've said before, because we've had a few years now, or more than a few years, of the pushy microtransactions and everything. So there's more nostalgia for that early 2010s before that really took off, that people are actually going back and enjoying those games because they remember how it was focused on having the best basketball gaming experience possible and not all these other things that the suits love but and the developers have to go along with and that we don't love in particular. That there is that nostalgia there for that simpler experience or that experience that is not tainted by the recurrent revenue push.
Yeah, I'll say it for you. It's okay, you know, if you want to go back and enjoy Bart versus the Space Mutants. There, yeah. It's on the episode now.
That is harder to do because of the mechanics of that game, but yes, it is. I certainly can if I wish to. But
hell,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I go back and play games like Bayou Billy and like Blaster Master.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And games like Marble Madness and stuff like that. And I'm with you. You know, you go back and you play those games and they're a great couch experience or a couch co-op experience, depending on the game that you're playing and whatnot. Why is that okay and looked at in a certain light? But then if I go back and play Tecmo Super NBA Basketball, it's looked at like I'm an old head. Like, oh, you silly old head going back and playing those games. Like, remember when I, you know, showed that gameplay of NBA Live 2003 and I got crapped on for it?
Yeah.
They're like, oh, this is crap. This is, you know, this is butt. Or this is, you know, oh, my God, how can you look at those animations? Look at the speed. Oh, my God, you thought you did something there. That's the type of comments that I got for posting an NBA Live 2003 video. But these are the same people that would say, oh, Contra was great. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that game was great. Why would you do that? You know, I didn't put on the NBA Live 2003 video and say, man, this game is so much better graphics than the games today. Or, animation.
Present it. I mean, again, I will not say that NBA Live 96 is a flawless title that has never been surpassed, but I do love the PC version anyway. I love that game. You know, it's one of my all-time favorites, and I know the limitations. I know how much it was surpassed within a couple of years, let alone the 24, 25 since it came out. So it's not about that. It's not about saying this is awesome. This is, well, it's saying, you know, I'm having a good time with an old game, or even just highlighting an old game. And I think it does come down to whether people are really feeling that nostalgia yet, and that does come with hitting a certain age. And we are seeing some of the younger players doing younger gamers. Hitting that nostalgic phase, is it, I think it kind of hits around about your mid-20s. You know, remember, at least it did for me. I mean, probably a bit earlier, but certainly really started to hit around the mid to late 20s. So it really comes, I think, with age, as a lot of things do.
Yeah, I mean, I brought this up on a previous episode, but I've been playing the hell out of Sewer Shark, and I just beat it again. You know, I don't care if that game came out in 1992 or 1993. I think it was 1993. Like, that game is fun. You know, I'm not going to come out and say that it's the best concept ever. I'm not going to say that it's the best graphics ever. I'm not going to say that the game has long enough gameplay, because it's not. It's too short, in my opinion. But the game, when you put it on, is fun. And for me to say that it's fun and that I enjoy the game shouldn't be attacked. You know what I mean? Attacked in any way.
Well, you look at a game like NBA Street Volume 2. Which just received an updated mod from Agent Michael Skarn, updated the previous updates for the mods for the GameCube version of NBA Street Volume 2. You can check that out in the download section and in the other basketball game section of the forum. That's a game that's still held in high regard. In fact, there's a lot of people there was an article, I think, that even called that the greatest basketball game of all time. I wouldn't necessarily go that far with it. I think it's a tremendous game. It's just that's a big claim to make, plus also there's different genres of basketball game as well, so I think that's a problematic claim in that respect. But that is a pretty old game now, yet it was a fantastic game at the time and still holds up very well. And there's a bit of a modding community around it. And especially with modding, as we know in our community very well, you can take an old game, like a 2K11 that somebody might be working hard on a roster update for, and make a new experience with it, and what's old is new again. But even if you don't want to update it, to go back to that old experience and that familiar experience, there's a whole phenomenon of people would rather go back and watch old things than try new things. And maybe that comes with age as well. But we do really gravitate towards the familiar, and nostalgia is obviously a big part of that. So, yeah, it's definitely something that, as we've touched upon, you know, we feel very strongly.
I think part of the thing is it's fascinating when I see mods like that because they're modding the emulator, right? The ROM or the emulator, or if they're doing even like a handheld version, it blows my mind that people can do that because that means the opportunities are limitless if you can break into a game, right?
Pretty much,
so,
yeah.
You know, I look at, you know, I was just looking at this game, you know, NBA, and I keep bringing it up because it's just something that we're playing right now, but MLB The Show 08, you know, if somebody can break into that game and give us more legends, you know, like Mark McGwire, whether you consider him a legend or not, you know, Cal Ripken and whatnot, and you can make those guys part of the game, I find that fascinating, right? Mm. So I love it when people do that, or whether it be ROMs, emulators, you know, handheld or whatever, and, you know, they're able to mod the games. One thing that I thought was great about that thread is how he did the makeup of teams. You know, they did, like, new and old. Like, he put Trae Young on the Hawks and whatnot, you know, for that NBA Street Volume 2 mod. I thought that was cool. I can't get past that screenshot of Grant Hill with cornrows because that's something he never had. But I understand that his options, the creators, his options were probably limited as far as what he could do with those assets or edit. But yeah, the one screenshot that kind of got to me was just Grant Hill with cornrows.
I suppose that's what a version 2 is for, if you can find a way of fixing that up. But yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. You can check that out in the forum, in the download section as well. But from going to spending a few bucks on classics to spending a lot of money on new games, of course, one of the other things that's been very controversial about the launch of next-gen 2K21, or the impending launch, of course, we won't see what the game is like apart from that teaser trailer until, certainly after current-gen comes out, one would imagine. But there has, of course, been a price increase, $10 in the US, as it is, for the next-gen titles, or at least NBA 2K21. And this has stirred up controversy. People have pointed out that, some people do defend it because they say that it's a small increase, which it is. And certainly if it breaks the budget, then maybe gaming is not, you know, shouldn't be a priority for you. But it definitely has been controversial. And one of the reasons, of course, Derek, is that the games these days, and Jim Sterling has gone into great detail about this and has really broken down the whole, oh, games are so cheap anyway, and they need to cover costs, is that whatever you pay the base rate for games is basically kind of like an entry fee to the games, because there is so much in the way of microtransactions, the recurrent revenue mechanics, is that there's so much opportunity for them to make money post-release, is that that's why they've been able to keep the price of games low, and of course digital distribution as well, that you don't even have to press discs anymore for a large majority of the user base, is that price that you pay is that entry point. It's the base price, and players, not everybody, because there's a lot of no money spent people, ourselves included, but there is a way of those games making so much more bank post-release that to say that they need to up it to $10 to cover costs or to justify, you know, producing the game, it rings pretty hollow.
So this is a thing where I understand both sides, but I agree with Jim Sterling as well. So this is I'm not sure if you have this take, but I agree that the base game, like for 2K, let's use 2K as an example. When you get into NBA 2K, there is so much that you can do without paying an extra dime. There is lot. You have all of the offline content. You have the all-time teams. You have, whether they're done right or not, which they're not, the all-time teams, the classic teams. You have the regular teams. You have, you know, the WNBA. You have a WNBA season. You have my league. You have your base my team, where you don't technically have to put in a cent. You know, you have your base my career, you know, all of this stuff. Like, you still have all of this content that, in my opinion, justifies a $60 price point, right? Like, I do believe that. And I believe that, you know, when I play other games too, you know, sometimes they will, you know, try to, you know, get you to, you know, pay, you know, microtransactions, you know, pay extra amount and all this stuff to get additional content or to unlock things or to do things quicker and stuff like that. But in most cases, from what I'm seeing, it's not really pay to win. It's, you know, you still get a lot in your base game. So I see that. But then I also see Jim's side as far as the preying on consumers is at its height right now.
Yeah.
I do see that, you know, they intentionally make games more grindy and modes more grindy in order for you to want to spend that extra money. Or they will have certain special things, you know, locked behind a paywall. I want to give you a good example of this. And this is, in my opinion, incredibly crappy by the people who made this game. So Tennis World Tour came out and Roger Federer is on the cover, correct? So what they did, and they added, you had to buy Rafael Nadal. Like, you couldn't unlock him in the game. He's DLC. So in order to get a regular player who's a now player on tour in a game with players on tour, you had to spend $5 to get him. That's the type of stuff that I'm completely against, right?
Yep.
There, if you wanted to make him part of the core gameplay where you could unlock him, or you say, hey, we have a new addition to our game, a now player. Here's Rafael Nadal. You know, and that's fine. But for you to say, hey, listen, you know what? You want a now player who's playing on the tour now in his prime and all of that stuff. Here, you have to spend money to get him. Hmm. And I think there's a difference between the two, in my honest opinion. So I also want to point out that technology does get better. We know this. There are more resources that need to go into to the new games, depending on the technology and, you know, all the different features that the new games have and trying to elevate their game and all of that stuff. So I understand it from a business perspective to say, hey, you know what, we're pooling the technology costs more. We're pooling all of our resources in. We're pooling more resources in and all of that stuff. And this is justified for this reason, and that's why. But at the same time, it's going to turn people off. You know, I was looking at old video game commercials like you and I do often because we're ridiculous. You know, you look at Angry Video Game Nerd, right?
Yeah.
And I look at, you know, old videos on YouTube of, you know, the old commercials because it's fascinating to me. I did it for like a couple hours the other night. I was looking up old NES commercials and Sega CD and stuff.
Down the rabbit hole, Yeah,
and, you know, it went down the rabbit hole. And I'm looking at it and, you know, games like Ninja Gaiden 2, with that technology was like $50. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You know, you pop NBA Showdown and that was $50. And now we're here in 2020 and games are $50 or $60. So, with much more enhanced technology, you know, than what we had back then. So like, I understand, both sides of it. At the same time, like Jim Sterling said, because of preying on consumers, it leaves a bad taste in people's mouths and they feel like the gaming industry is taking advantage of them.
I mean, that's what it comes down to. I mean, it's true that games have come a long way. There's more that goes into them. There's more costs as far as doing things like paying actors for the My Career. I mean, of course, you could just cut out My Career stories. That would be, I don't think a lot of people would really miss that if they did. But there is more to it. Games have increased in quality, in scope, and yes, they don't cost, they cost the same. And despite inflation, they haven't really gone up. In fact, in some cases, you know, they're comparatively cheaper. It is the recurrent revenue mechanics, though, that really gets to me, that they do make a lot more bank with that, which is something they didn't do in the old days. And they take content out to repackage it. And although 2K isn't pay to win in the strictest sense, it still has that freemium economy in a AAA title. So it kind of rubs me the wrong way doing it that way, and of course, you know, that's what Jim Sterling's whole point is, and the, as you said, the predatory mechanics and making the grind artificial so that you have to pay if you want to speed it up, and that's selling a solution to a problem that they created, basically. That's the other thing that Jim has really stressed on so many occasions is that it is selling a solution to a problem that they artificially created. The other thing is, and I'll read the quote from Strauss-Zelnick on this, because he originally he said that it was he justified the price hike here. And his quote, this is via the IGN article, "There hasn't been a price increase for frontline titles for a really long time, despite the fact that it costs a great deal more to make those titles," he said in an interview. "And we think that the value that we offer consumers and the kind of experience you can only really have on these next-generation consoles and the price is justified." Which, okay, you know, that's one thing. But if you're increasing the price for next-gen because it's next-gen and new and everything, why aren't they dropping the price on current-gen when it's basically a roster update from the previous year?
I mean, that's the...
I mean, we know why. We know why, but my question to Strauss would be, well, if the next-gen needs to be more expensive and the current-gen is basically more of the same and a lower priority, but it's still the same price, yeah, you know.
Right, exactly. And so, well, there's a couple things with that. First off, the biggest problem with all of this is preying on people's emotions, right? Yeah. That's where they get that extra revenue for my team and my career. And these games get all these extra, all of these, you know, millions of dollars in extra revenue based on preying on people's emotions. And they design the games to do that. So, yeah, I completely agree with you and Sterling on that. The other thing is they can make a statement on that. But I want you, you know, to explain to me why it's okay to still have NBA 2K16 and 17 on Steam for $60.
Yeah, when those servers are shut down.
Why is that okay?
Half the game is gone.
Why is it okay for me to spend $60 on a game and for you to take out a bunch of modes a couple of years later by shutting down the servers?
Yeah. Exactly.
Why is that okay? So I mean, there's definitely two sides of it, and like I said, I understand both points of view, but I think my biggest problem with it is, you know, the preying on people's emotions and the fact that both sides aren't being told in these articles.
No. Zonic did clarify that they're going to be announcing pricing on a title-by-title basis. That is something that has been said before. Interestingly, just a couple of days later, they said that Zonic came out again and said it may not be the company's plans for all the next-gen titles moving forward. So they're trying it with 2K because 2K is such a big seller for them and such a successful franchise. But I think he had to back off a little bit from that because those comments didn't go down well. He's a very wealthy executive. 2K makes a lot of money. 2K doesn't have the best reputation at the moment because of the things they've been doing with 2K's more predatory mechanics. So this was actually kind of a rare moment of self-awareness from the suits at 2K that they actually kind of came out and did a bit of damage control that doesn't really allay all the concerns or dispute what we've been saying and what others have been saying, and Jim Sterling in particular has been saying. But they did actually come out and say, well, you know, it's not set in stone, because maybe they realized that it wasn't a very popular decision or very popular announcement. And to double down on that, and in the middle of a pandemic when people are losing jobs and whatnot, it was kind of tone deaf. But then tone deaf is kind of what 2K does.
Yeah, I mean, they couldn't come right out and say this, but, you know, if they were upping the game, you know, $10 more for the price, and then they said at the same time, you know, the purpose of this is not the purpose of this, but one of the reasons we're doing this is because we're cutting down on all of our predatory mechanics in the system, like our predatory approach. Like, they obviously couldn't, that would make them look absolutely terrible. But if they were increasing the price by $10 while making so many things in the game less dependent on microtransactions and all of that stuff.
I'd accept that.
You know what I mean? It's funny, yeah, because if you heard them say that, you'd be like, well, you know what? This might make sense. This might make me save a lot of money in the long run. Or people a lot of money in the long run and whatnot. Of course, they could never come out and say that because that would be admitting fault.
You have to find a way of really couching that in a positive way of saying that we're enhancing the... Oh, geez, how would you even say it? Enhancing the post-release experience or something. Or increasing the post... Yeah, you have to do something about value. And they're trying to say it there, but you know at the same time, they're not going to cut down on the grinding mechanics, which is why a lot of people see it as BS.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think there's people that are truly a fan of the neighborhood either.
Mm.
I think that, I mean, there are people that are a fan of the neighborhood. I know this is kind of getting a little off track, but I think there's some people that are a fan of it. But I think that we've talked about it before. I don't think people want an RPG in their basketball game.
Well, certainly not to the extent of an open world to explore that's very limited. I mean, you're not going to have a Grand Theft Auto-like map or a Fallout-like map. in as the neighborhood. So at the end of the day, it's going to run out of content, and you can do the events that change things up, but it's not enough, and they get repetitive after a while too. I know you don't spend a lot of time or any time in my career, but that's, I think, a common complaint. I even brought it up on Reddit. I made a post over there and said, maybe it does make me a bit of a dinosaur, but I don't like the neighborhood. And someone replied to me and said, look, I'm younger than you, and I think it's crap as well. So this is one thing that maybe the old heads and the nephews are actually in agreement on, that it's really taking away from the experience more than it adds to it. Although, again, people do put stock in it, and they do put stock in they were upset the 2K20's neighborhood was too similar to 2K19, basically the same. So, I mean, the people do care, maybe just because it's not. Maybe it's not because they love the neighborhood or the concept and the things that it creates, but if it's going to be there, they at least want the effort put in. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, it could be. I think that I think a lot of people think that the implementation of a lot of things are just unnecessary. Like, it's a waste of time. Like, I shouldn't have to spend all of this time getting to a location,
it
right?
is.
I shouldn't have to spend all of this time waiting. I'm playing a basketball game.
But it makes
Right,
those
so
engagement numbers look really good, doesn't it? Because, oh, look at all the time people are spending. Like, people are spending all this time in the neighborhood, yeah.
which they brag about. Yeah, they constantly brag about how much time people are spending on the game.
But
So,
here's the thing. If you have no choice but to spend time in the neighborhood, and I've brought up this point before in articles and on the podcast, if you have no choice but to spend time in the neighborhood because it is the game world, by default, you're going to spend a lot of time in the neighborhood by playing that mode. I mean, by that logic, the main menu is the most popular screen in the game because we all go to it as soon as we fire up the game. There is no menu more visited than the main menu in NBA 2K because there's no choice.
yeah, exactly. I think it's nuts that they basically can get away with, you know, pump and this is, listen, I'm an NBA 2K fan, okay? For better or for worse, you and I both have been playing the series, you know, especially me, because I know you were more of a live person. But, you know, I've been playing it for about 20 years, right? So it blows my mind that they can be cocky and say, hey, this is how many downloads we've had, and this is how much time people are spending on the game, and, you know, pumping themselves up like they do, whether it be Ronnie 2K or the 2K handle themselves and all of this stuff, and then looking at having no competitors in the space, right? It's like saying, you know, why don't we tell two sides? You know what? Hey, we're the only ones in the space. They can't do that. But, you know, we're the only ones in the space. People have to buy our game if they want to play 5-on-5 basketball. This is the reason we have this many downloads, right? So, I mean, like, there's just certain ways that they pump themselves up that gets, you know, me a little bit uneasy and bothers me a little bit, because it's like, hey, let's look at context here.
It's a bit
Let's
self-congratulatory, I suppose.
Yeah, it's very self-congratulatory, but it's missing context.
Yeah, that's marketing 101, I suppose. But to bring an international perspective to the price hike, I'm looking at the JB Hi-Fi website. That we're not sponsored by JB Hi-Fi. We could be, but we're not. Which is a big Australian retailer and my retailer of choice for electronics. It's sounding like it's an ad. I really do like prefer that because they do have the best prices. But that is the point. For games, they do have the best prices. EB Games, which is the Australian version of what used to be, of course, Electronic Boutique, and that is Australian GameStop, basically. EB Games, they're often more expensive. And you usually get new games through JB for around about $69 to $79. I'm looking at the site here at the moment. NBA 2K21 on current gen is $69, as usual. For the pre-order for the PS5 and Xbox Series X, $109. So that's a difference of $40. So is there going to be $40 worth of difference in the next gen? See, that's, you know, so we even get the bigger price hike here in Australia. So I'm looking at that and thinking, I don't know if there's going to be $40 extra quality and content in NBA 2K21 to really justify $40. Because you look at the special edition, the Marlboro Forever edition of the current gen is $149. And even the, I believe the, let's see, Marlboro Forever for Xbox Series X, also $149. So you're approaching the special edition price for the standard edition version of PS5 and Xbox Series X in Australia. Yeah, I just don't know if it's going to have that much extra value at those prices.
It won't.
Yeah, that's
It
a
won't.
$40
You want it?
$40 price hike.
People will buy it. I mean,
Oh,
and
they
also
will, yeah.
this show is sponsored by Beavis and Butthead Do America and Sega CD. That's what I've come up with. That's what the show is sponsored. I don't know if anybody cares about that anymore, but you know, we're totally 90s here. So, but yeah, I agree. I think that I had to bring up Beavis and Butthead Do America. Is, you know, we talked about it before the show.
We did, yeah.
It's a wild movie.
Just a couple of butt munches.
Yeah, just a couple. Exactly. No, I think part of the problem is that they can get away with it again, regardless of where you are in the world. It's the only 5-on-5 sim. NBA Live is ducked out. There's, you know, nobody else in that space. So, hell, they could, you know, as well as I do, even if in the States here they sold NBA 2K21 for $100 for the regular edition, for the main edition, you know, for PS5 or whatnot, not even the Mamba edition, people would still buy it. Like, that's just the way it's going
to
be.
That's true, so. And again, this is what comes back to what we've said so many times, is that this is the problem with the lack of competition. People say, NBA Live should stay dead, and we don't need other games, and it's all about 2K. But then they complain that 2K is taking advantage of them. It's like, well, this is why we need competition, fellas. Ladies and gentlemen.
They're the same people, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. They're the same people that, you know, would say, you know, NBA Live is ass. Sorry for that, but that's what they say. NBA Live is ass. You
trash.
Know,
let's,
trash, garbage NBA Live. And they're like, you know,
LOL,
just stop
you play this.
Yeah, you play this good. Yeah, why don't you go play an ass game like NBA Live or something like that? Like they like are a trash game. And these are the same people that are complaining about the price hikes, or the same people that are complaining about NBA 2K's gameplay and all of that stuff. It's like, don't you understand that even if a mediocre game comes out, it's something?
Yeah.
If another mediocre game comes out, it's something. It is competition and whatnot. So these people, they need a reality check.
Yeah.
Basically.
Well, that's what we're trying to do here on the NLC podcast, as well as bringing back 90s references like Beavis and Butthead. And you know right. they had a few games. Have you ever played any of the Beavis and Butthead games? They vary in quality.
Back in the day, no, Beavis and Butthead games are the equivalent, in my opinion, to like Ren and Stimpy titles. Like I used to have Ren and Stimpy Vidiots, which was, I believe, a Super Nintendo title and whatnot. And those games are quirky and have decent gameplay for what they are. And I think they represent the shows pretty well. I was never a Beavis and Butthead guy, really. I did watch the movie. I was more of a Ren and Stimpy guy. I love the 90s references and even some of the 80s ones, like some of the old NES games and whatnot. So it's fun times.
But like you say, that is the way it goes with the price hike, is that people will pay it because, again, it is the only game on the market. It is one that it delivers. I mean, 2K does deliver, for all our complaints. It delivers a fairly consistent experience, and that is something that NBA Live has lacked over the years. So people will pay it, but it's disappointing to see. It will be interesting moving forward to see how people will deal with those price hikes, and certainly if the recurrent revenue mechanics continue to be pushy, I think it's going to be a much more controversial situation, because people will bring up that point. So, well, hey, yes, we are paying more for that base game, but we're still having to pay so much more or grind really hard just to get value, and we have to work hard to make the game enjoyable. And that goes back to what Baluba said about making the game enjoyable. Yes, part of that, big part of that, of course, is in the mechanics and everything else. But as far as those recurrent revenue mechanics, not just the gameplay mechanics, but the way things work as far as earning my team cards and in-game currency and my career upgrades and online and everything like that, that's what it comes down to. And if those mechanics are also problematic, then the game can feel really good on the sticks. But if you have to really work hard to actually make the game playable, like with your player starting out at a 60 overall, lower than anybody in the actual NBA, while the story is still saying that they're a big deal, and yet the ratings suggest that they shouldn't even be in the league. If those problems persist on next gen, it's not going to be as enjoyable as they want it to be and what it needs to be, especially for the price.
Yeah. You know, I talked about this with sliders before. If in order to make the game enjoyable, if you have to go in and mess with a ton of sliders and do hours and hours and hours and hours of experimenting and all of that stuff, and you can't just jump into a game and still have a pretty good time, then there's something wrong.
Mm.
That's a red flag. If you have to go in and try to fix the game and try to edit all of these sliders and get rid of all of these issues, you know, with the game, then, you know, there's a problem with the core game. With the core gameplay, with the core mechanics and stuff like that. So, yeah, I agree. I think that in order to make it fun, you have to have the right approach as far as not milking everybody for every cent that they're worth, and also having a good between the lines experience.
And I mentioned servers earlier because that is a recurring problem with 2K. All the money that the game makes doesn't really go back into the... You know, they talk about it going into the game, and yet the servers have been, to be blunt, shit for years now. So the idea that we need this money for the game, but it's not going into the game, is it? It's going into the suit's pockets. If that money was going in...
You know, rosters rush, too. I'm sorry, I know this is... you know, rosters rushed, people with, you know, them copying and pasting players over each other and stuff like that for their signatures and their ratings and all of that stuff. And, you know, the classic stuff being completely off. Luka Doncic having a zero on his step back, you know, stuff like, you know, for his step back tendency and stuff like that. That is all time that, you know, if we're spending that kind of money, we want that stuff to be right.
Quality. Yeah, right? We want quality control.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So sorry for interrupting you there, but, you know, I wanted to bring up the roster.
I mean, that's all ties into it as well. But certainly, I mean, the money is not going towards server quality. They've talked about how the servers are better. That's, you know, I don't like throwing the word lie around. People use the word lie about games way too readily. But that is something that I believe they have lied about, the online quality improving. I mean, it may be different in the States. Obviously, I'm in Australia, and we don't even have Australian servers. We have to play on the Japanese servers. That's what we connect to. So that's a problem in and of itself, that there's no wider Australasian servers that Australia and New Zealand can connect to. But the server quality is not that... It has not improved, really, over the years. Still getting all these lag spikes, which again, is why the idea of making green release only... To make jump shots is such a problem as well, going back to that, just to wrap up and tie up to that point. It's, if the money was going into improving the infrastructure and doing things like that, I think it would still be problematic, but I think people would say, well, at least the money is going to improving the game. But as it stands, it's really just going into the suit's pockets, so it's kind of a bullshit thing. You know, we need this money. It's like, no, you need this money to buy a new boat, mate. And I'm going really Aussie on this, actually. But, you know, that's why, you know, call it out for what it is that the recurrent revenue, all those profits, it's going to the suits. It's not going to the quality of the game. It's not enhancing things like the rosters, as you said. It's not enhancing the quality of the servers. So it's kind of like, you know, don't bullshit us on this one. We know where the money is going.
Yeah, I think with that, too, is you look at the overall quality of the game in scope, has it improved your experience? You know what I mean? Like, in scope, have you turned on the game and is your experience improved? And one of the things that I look at is if you go on Steam reviews, and they were mostly negative for most of NBA 2K's 20 cycle. If you go on like Steam reviews and you look at the thousands of people, you know, they're giving it thumbs down.
Yeah.
And a big portion of that are for two reasons. One, the servers, and the other is microtransactions. So if you have thousands and thousands and thousands of people going on Steam and giving those reviews and giving it thumbs down, and they're talking about issues with the server and whatnot, that's a red flag. And I've talked about this on prior shows, is they can say, oh, well, you know, only people go on, you know, people mostly just go on if they're going to complain. That's not true. That's a myth. Because if you go on and you look at other games, if you look at
positive,
so many other games, you get very positive, overwhelmingly positive, mostly positive. And there are as many games with very positive as there are with mostly negative. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear. It's the same thing with Metacritic. Metacritic has, you know, games like 2K16, 2K17, 2K15 and whatnot reviewed higher. They have them at like 6 or 7. Or even a little bit higher in some cases. And then all of a sudden, between 2K18 and 2K20, they have the drop. They have, you know, a Metacritic user score of 2 or a 0.5 or like a 1 or something like that along those lines, so under a 3. So people are not just going on and saying negative things. They're not, like, people are not just going on and just to, you know, complain about the games and they're not the only people. You're right. Basically, what people are doing is if they like the game, they will rate it well. They will go on and give that feedback, and they'll say very positive or overwhelmingly positive or mostly positive. And then, you know, it speaks to a problem with the game when you have thousands of people going online complaining about them. And then when you see that the complaints are mostly about the same issues, there's clearly a problem. You know, it's affecting their experience negatively and stuff like that. So I hate when people say that, you know, oh, well, you know, that review doesn't count because people just go online to complain. I can show you hundreds of instances with other games of people going on and giving thousands of reviews and saying positive things.
It's a recurring problem, and it's a very recent problem, because as you say, you go back far enough, the Metacritic scores for the professional reviews are the same, but the user scores were much higher back in the day, like you say, around the 6 or 7, because you always have people review bombing or just not liking the game for one reason or another, and people tend to go with the extremes. This is why YouTube went to the like and dislike, because people were just going 1 star or 5 star back in the days when YouTube had star ratings. So people do get very binary with whether they like something or not. If you give them a score, maybe they might go in the mid-range, 3 or something, if it's kind of average, or they feel it's kind of average, but they will usually go to the extremes. Really good, you know, the score of 10 or score of 1, usually. So it does come down to that. My final thought...
Well, when you go on a YouTube video... Oh, sorry, but when you do go to a video and it's bad quality and you look at the like-to-dislike ratio, the dislike ratio is much higher. And you're see why.
And it works, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It does work.
And that's the point I'm trying to make, right? Yeah, but if you go to a video that's well done, we've talked about Jim Sterling, and we've talked about the Lazy Peon, and we've talked about these other people, where they actually, you know, put thought into it, and they give users a good experience, what's the like-to-dislike ratio like?
Yeah.
It's much higher in the form of like. Like gets it, you know, 90 to 95% likes, and, you know, probably less than 10 or less percent of dislikes. So people do go on and give good feedback if the product or video or influencer or whatever is good.
By and large, yeah. My final thought that I'll express for now about the price raise, the price hike in NBA 2K21. If everything works out with the game, I mean, I'm not really fond of that, the idea of next gen games being $40 more expensive in Australia. But if it works out that way, if the game is lives up to the hype, if it truly is next gen, if it justifies, you know, they say we feel it's justified. Of course they feel it's going to be justified. They feel microtransactions are justified. They feel a freemium economy is justified. So anything they do, they're going to justify because they want to sell a product. But if it does turn out to be, by the quality of the experience, if it does turn out to be justified, fair enough. But if this next gen experience that supposedly justifies all those costs, if this next-gen version of NBA 2K21 still has legacy issues going back to 2K10, 2K11, if it still has the problems that were introduced around about 2K18 to 20, if it's not that big jump, then that is something that I'm going to call out, and I would hope that a lot of other content creators, influencers, and reviewers will call out. But you know what? I'm not confident that they're going to call that out, because a lot of those issues have been in the game for 10 years already, and they haven't been calling it out. But if they are going to put up the price, and if they're going to call it next gen and say that it needs to be at that higher price because of this all brand new technology and all the manpower that goes into it, and it still has those legacy issues from over 10 years ago, I'm sorry, but then it doesn't justify the price, and they need to be called out on that BS.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think people will. I think a lot of people will call him out on it.
Well, gamers will. We will.
Feedback. Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, but is our voice loud enough?
And you're still going to see the same reviews from the various sources that are going to be 8s and 9s and 10s and talk about how wonderful it is and basically be puff pieces, glorified IGN, press releases. Yeah.
It will be like a 9.2 or something, and truly bringing in next-gen the right way.
And not mentioning any of the legacy issues at all. Yeah.
Exactly. A completely new experience that gamers needed.
Worth the price. Worth the raise in price. Worth the price rise.
Yeah.
Even though it's got the same issues that we've been complaining about since 2K11. Look, no game is going to be perfect. But again, if it is not truly next-gen, if it is still... If it on this new engine, this brand new next gen stuff, and it's still got all those legacy issues by design or by legacy assets that they've had to bring in, because there's only so much you can do within a couple of years, of course, then that needs to be called out. And we'll call it out, other gamers will, the user reviews and user scores will do it, but I just know that there's going to be a lot of reviews that go towards the professional Metacritic score that are not going to do it. And they're going to, as you say, they're going to use platitudes like you said, you know, truly bringing in a next-gen experience and all kinds of things that 2K's marketing department might as well have handed them on a platter. You know, this is what you've got to write in your reviews if you want access. And let's not pretend that doesn't happen, or it's at least implied, if not outright said, if you want access, you need to be kind to us. Then Yeah. Then it's really going to expose the content creators and the reviewers even more so of who knows what they're talking about and who is actually honest and willing to be honest. Because if you can't put if you're going to put your reputation on the line, you also have to put your access on the line like that. And it's yeah.
The new NLSC tagline should be the NLSC podcast where we are woke.
Yeah.
That's what it should be. I think we talk a lot about a lot of things here, especially like we talk about on the show that is just not often discussed enough, and it kind of calls out the industry for what it is right now. And like we've talked about, it's not all negative.
No, not at
We've
all,
talked
no.
about the good things that 2K has done. We've talked about the good marketing that they've also done, you know, for better or for worse, or whether it was beneficial to the game or not. We've talked about, you know, the additional content that they've added, how well they've done the WNBA integration in comparison to NBA Live, the things that they borrowed but also made better. Like you had talked about, it's about who does it better, not who does it first, and stuff like that. So no, we definitely talk about, you know, and then also the past 2K games that we've really had fun with. So it's not all negative, but
Not at all.
these practices do need to be called out, and the implementation of new price hikes and additional practices, they need to be questioned.
Well, 2K has set the bar very high because 2K has had fantastic games. And if you set the bar high, you're going to be held to a higher standard. If you are going to be the brand leader, if you've done all the great things that 2K has done, then people are going to expect that you to maintain that quality and to deliver on that experience and not go backwards and not to be anti-consumer, although that's kind of the way the gaming industry as a whole, it's a problem, you know, that goes beyond 2K. But 2K has been a fantastic series. You know, we've had our complaints, but it has been a fantastic series, so it gets held to a high standard. And that's just the way it is, you know, and they know that, the developers know that. So, but that is the way, by the standard they've established, the bar they've set for themselves. If they don't clear that bar, and certainly if they do things that make it very difficult for them to clear that bar, like a price hike, like a very pushy recurrent revenue mechanics, things like that, they're going to get called out on it. Maybe not by the professional reviewers, air quotes again, but certainly by the consumers. And it's we've seen that in recent years, and I think it's going to be a thing. If they fail to meet those expectations, especially with the price hike, I think and hope people will call them out because it's only fair. It's only fair.
Right. Like we said, you know, we hope that, you know, the outrage at the beginning, you know, for the first couple of months of 2K20's release and the people that were complaining about all the glitches in the game and the issues with the servers and all of that stuff, you know, with the hashtag fix NBA 2K20 or whatever, you know, like, or, you know, and the developers taking breaks, hopefully, like we had talked about, that was a red flag for them and that they that maybe they fixed some of those issues that people were complaining about.
Here's hoping, you know, we will know in a few weeks or a few months for the, or a couple of months, I suppose, for the next gen around the holiday season. Current gen is coming out in a little under a month as this is being recorded, so we'll see what happens with both games. But we can hope for the best, and certainly, yeah, as they say, keep that energy going as far as being able as calling out 2K, and don't have to be definitely don't be nasty about it. Don't be aggressive and attacking developers, but you can say quite honest. You can be honest without being a jerk, basically, or for that matter, without being a butt munch. If you want to bring back some Beavis and Butthead slang, you don't be a butt munch with your constructive. Be constructive, don't be a butt munch. There's a tagline for us, but
Right,
yeah.
don't be like Beavis and Butthead. Be like, oh, let's see, who's intellectual in the cartoon scene?
From 90s cartoons, that's a yeah. I don't know.
That's tough to find. Yeah, I'd have to think about that one. But
J
yeah, don't be
Jay Sherman from The Critic. He has a Pulitzer Prize for criticism. How about that? For The Critic, the short-lived series. But yeah, we will cover that, continue to cover that and the preview season as it happens. We will definitely give our honest opinions on those games as they come out, current gen and next gen, of course. A game that is winding down, however, and this is our last topic for this week, is NBA Live 16. Its service will be shutting down on October 19th. Shout out to Pavel for drawing my attention to this. It's been a while since I booted up Live 16, so I didn't see the notification until he let me know about it. But October 19th at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, US time, of course, that will be those servers will be shut down. So basically, Derek, if people have any unfinished business in NBA Live 16, now is the time to get on that, because in a couple of months, the online content such as Live Run, Live Pro-Am, Ultimate Team, is going to be gone. So if you have any unfinished business, you want to get some trophies or achievements that are attached to online services, yeah, be quick about it.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people were playing NBA Live 16 anymore, but there were a few. And if you remember correctly, over the last year, there was a recent spike in interest. There was suddenly a bunch of people like getting on there and like playing my team, and you know, putting cards on the market and stuff like that. I saw it all over Twitter for a while.
I think Ultimate Team's been so disappointing the last couple of years that people have gone back to the last one that was really solid and good. And so that's where the interest has come from.
Yeah, I love the structure of, and we talked about this with 2K15, but I love the structure of NBA Live 16's Ultimate Team. I think it makes sense. It's challenging. It's rewarding and whatnot. I like the mechanics of it. I like the challenges. All
less repetitive.
So yeah, it's less repetitive. I prefer that. So I mean, it's a sad thing for some people, but I don't think it will be sorely missed. And I'll say again, part of the reason is just because NBA Live's embarking into Xbox One and PS4 territory was just so poor.
Yep.
And people never really got over that. And then they never really figured out a really good mechanic system or something that worked that people enjoyed until Live 18 and Live 19. Personally, I didn't really enjoy Live 18 much. But I did enjoy Live 19 more until they patched the crap out of it.
Yes, jump shots.
Right, exactly. But at the same time, like I said, I don't think it's going to be missed by that many people, but it is kind of sad. The end of an era, if you want to look at that era as positive or not.
I mean, with NBA Live in this generation, the one thing you can say is that they've had that post-release online support for a long time. I mean, it's going to be over 5 years since its release that it's actually had online service. And the same was with Live 14 and Live 15 as well. I think about, 6 or 7 years almost with Live 14 and 15 similar shut down about a month later. So they've really left it up. So if they wanted people to try and get into the series and play those old games and finish business, we've had ample time to do it compared to the 27 months that we get with NBA 2K. And of course, they've had much more limited microtransactions in Live. That is one thing they've done well, although I think if Live were better and more successful, they would definitely be pushing the microtransactions. You've seen that in Madden Ultimate Team, and of course FIFA Ultimate Team especially. So it's more a case of if the success hasn't justified the microtransactions rather than EA being generous with that, because they're not so generous with their other titles, that's for sure. It is a shame, and I think Live 16, you look at that, and I have nostalgia for it because I thought it was a pretty solid game. It's the last time I got flown in for a community event, and that was really cool after so many years of not being invited to those events, that to be able to attend one again and to get that inside scoop and everything. But even at the event, playing that game, and that was the year that, of course, Live Pro-Am came, and to your point about not many people playing that anymore, I did fire up the game, and it said 4 people were online in on the servers that I was on. So, yeah, certainly a lot of people have left that game behind at this point. But playing Live Pro-Am, and it was fun. I think 2K Pro-Am ended up being the more fun mode, conceptually, if not always in practice in recent years. And of course, they beat Live to the punch, and that actually came out while I was at the event, and that kind of shook the guys at EA, because that was their whole thing. You know, they were going to debut Live Pro-Am, and then 2K comes out with 2K Pro-Am, and it looks like they copied. Of course, they had the whole thing there. Who knows what happened there? But it showed that it was going to go more in that street direction, because Pro-Am was about that. And of course, when they came back with Live 18 after missing Live 17 or the Drive to NBA Live, and both of them, they came back with the one, with the streets, and you could see that it was moving more towards that. So for me, Live 16, it has some really good parts of it. I think it feels good. I like it a bit more than Live 18 and 19 and the feel on the sticks, and with shooting and everything, and they had that really good idea with the jump shot mechanics and the way that even with the best possible release, it was still determined by ratings and percentage, so you couldn't just green everything like you can with 18, 19. It's more like 2K in that respect. But you can see it moving that direction of, we're going to try something new and go for that new demographic and go for the streets idea of things and the pro-am things and the online team play. And you could see that that franchise, that it's still called Dynasty at the time, wasn't going to get the attention, that the NBA authenticity wasn't getting that attention. It was about this prime experience. And it was fun to do at the event, but even then at the time, I remember saying to the guys, look, you don't have roster editing, you don't have a deep franchise mode. There are people that are going to say, no go. You know, there are people that are going to say, we don't care about this stuff. And they took it on board, but obviously not well enough. And no, I am just one person. I tried people. I tried to emphasize those things. And I wasn't the only one. But it has come. It was the start of that move in that direction. And while I do have nostalgia for Live 16, I also kind of see it as a bit of a turning point as far as the focus. And that focus has taken it in a direction that has not helped the series. And the proof is in the pudding as far as the sales and reception.
Yeah, well, Live 16, Live 16 was basically the last time they were more focused on the NBA.
Yeah,
Live 16 was the last time where they were truly focused on the NBA as opposed to, like you had talked about, you know, the street element and whatnot. And I think that, you know, I talked about the Live 19 thing where you would, you know, finish your first event and it was like this 13 or 14-year-old kid getting on there and saying, oh, man, that was so exciting. And, like, he's on there, like, trying to pump it up. And he's, like, this young teenager and stuff. And it shows what they were trying to do, right? They were show it shows what trying to, kind of demographic they were trying to tap into. And I think that there was a monumental escape, and it shows the suit's disconnect with, you know, what gamers want.
Yeah,
we talk about that. We had an entire show called What Gamers Want.
We did, yeah.
And the thing is that the reason people love, you know, what people are focused on the most with basketball is what? The NBA. People love the NBA. They love the characters in the NBA. They love talking about the NBA. NBA is basketball, right? So I think what happened was is they disconnected from the focus on the NBA, and they went for that younger demographic, not realizing that, you know, the 18 to 24 and 24 to 35, those demographics and whatnot are still heavily involved in basketball gaming and whatnot. I think that they made a huge mistake in that turn that you were just discussing. So again, you know, NBA Live 16 holds a certain place in part because, again, it was the last time that they were kind of, you know, truly focused on the NBA.
And, you know, it's not just that, but the younger demographic, what game are they playing? 2K. So if you're not doing some of the things that 2K is doing, you're not offering them that alternative. And you're trying to do it with the streets because obviously Park, the playground, is a very popular mode in 2K. But the thing about 2K is that it starts with those very solid core mechanics based on replicating, simulating the NBA, and then branching out into the playground and pro-am and the cages and things like that. So the core mechanics are based around the NBA. If you don't have those, that solid foundation and those mechanics that are based on the sim element of basketball, the sim element of a sim game, and the realism and everything, and proper control mechanics and realism, all that kind of stuff, all the good stuff that makes a sim game, if that's not there as the basis, if you have it there, you can branch out into these other experiences and tweak it as necessary to have the street side of things. But if the core isn't right, then it's still not going to feel right when you change it up for the streets. And I think that's something that they've missed. They haven't got that core NBA. Without that core NBA gameplay being right, everything else branches out from there. And if it's wrong, everything else is going to feel wrong too.
Right, exactly. And I think part of it is with NBA 2K20, what frustrated some people is they almost went away from that authentic NBA experience a bit with changing the size-up system and making it less authentic in that regard. I feel like there's even less authenticity with 2K20 as there were in many of the prior games. Even in 2K16, they had like four different size-ups. Front, back, left, right, of, you know, different dribble moves that you can do that were authentic to the player that you could even assign to different players to suit, you know, how you want them to dribble and whatnot. I do think that 2K20 took a step back in authenticity, to be honest with you. And I'm hoping that they, you know, improve on that for 2K21.
$10 worth of authenticity? $10 extra worth of authenticity?
I would pay an extra $10 for them to give me the old size-up system. I would. Here's $10. Give me, you know, front, back, and side-to-side size-ups.
That's a hell of an idea for DLC. New dribbling mechanics. But yeah, some people would pay that. It's and certainly, yeah. But we have covered that at length. But Live 16, yeah, it's, like you say, it's the end of an era. Had a pretty good run. Over 5 years of online service for an annual release. Of course, Live has not been an annual release for much of the past decade, but a game that is, in theory, only covers one season and it is generally replaced by a game within within a year or so. It's a pretty good run for the game. It's one of the more solid titles out of the shaky comeback on this current generation for NBA Live. So it's a shame, but all things must come to an end. And it's, again, I jumped on there, four people online for Live Pro-Am. I tried to... I wondered if any of them were actually available to play with. So I tried to create a live run in the lobby, and it was just myself. Or it was a the summer circuit where you go around all the different venues and you can play 1 to 5 players. Yes, I was just in there with CPU players, so it's definitely not a lot of people playing it. So it's winding down. But yes, if you do have any unfinished business, and also as a content creator like you and I, Derek, it would behoove us to get screenshots and video of those features before it gets taken away. Because after October 19th, if you need to refer to that game in a video, if you're putting out like a wish list video or a retrospective or something, if you want those assets, those media assets, get them quick, because after that time, you won't be able to jump into those modes and get them.
Yeah, it's a little frustrating for content creators when they remove all of this access. But at the same time, there's a lot of access, a lot of videos still out there that, you know, you could repurpose and borrow from if you needed to take some footage.
That's true.
And as long as you gave credit and whatnot. If you want to take, yeah, exactly. We just had a whole discussion on this. I think that... part of the problem is that if you want a specific player or screen to be highlighted and whatnot, and it's not out there, you're kind of SOL. So
pretty much, yeah. So it's hard to get a comprehensive assets, because there will always be something that comes to mind later. I do recommend it for any content creators. If you do need to get some footage or screenshots, get as many as you can. You'll at least be able to get something that in the general idea of what you want to talk about usually. So give that a try, or you know, give it a try to do it as much as you can. And for everybody else, wrap up your business as quickly as possible, because after October 19th, it's all offline for NBA Live 16.
Yeah, and you know, I go back and play it every now and then. I have it for PS4 and on Xbox One, and it doesn't hold up that great gameplay wise. They still had a lot of work to do with the animations and whatnot in the feel, and you know, less input lag and all of that stuff in the post game and in the strange pass trajectory and stuff like that. Like it wasn't that strong of a gameplay thing, but like we talked about, even with games that were poor that we don't have that much fun with, or ones that you know haven't aged so well, we still go back and play them from time to time. So I'm glad that I own them.
Do you remember the first boot scenario you had with Live 16, where it was a game 7 of the finals between the Thunder and the Cavaliers, where you had to hit the game winning shot with the cover player Russell Westbrook?
Yeah, I do. And then if you did execute it right, they made you do it again.
Oh, is that what? See, I never did it. I never tried to break it, because it basically gets 100% release. I never tried to dribble out the clock or fail with it. Can you miss that shot?
I don't remember if you can miss it. I just remember messing with it, and I remember that if you don't do it right, they just put you back into the scenario. Like they go back to the they go back into the inbounds.
Wouldn't that be funny if they didn't? Like, yeah. Like it's just so. Like, oh, and the cover player loses. Welcome to Live 16.
Right, exactly. Or because you didn't hit this DLC that you paid for, you can't access it.
Takes modes out of the game. Yeah, to unlock modes. Yeah. Oh, unlocking. Yeah, that's a topic for another time, having to unlock basic features in the game in a way that's not extra content, but basic features. But we will get to
that. Don't get any ideas, 2K. Stop it.
Yeah.
Don't get any ideas.
We will get that to that another time and explain why that is a terrible idea and really argue against it. But yes, for now, that has brought us to the end of episode number 335 of the NLC podcast. We hope you enjoyed tuning in. Good to have some news, Derek.
No, it's great. This is a great time to be doing podcasts about basketball gaming. Not like they weren't before, but there's definitely a lot to talk about with the preview season. And we're going to have content, you know, to heavily get into updates and all of that stuff over the next 4 months. You know what I mean? And longer, because we have two separate releases of the games on different platforms and whatnot. And we'll have a ton to talk about the modding community and what they're getting into with NBA 2K21 for the PC. So. It's good stuff.
We will, of course, cover that moving forward, so stay tuned for that. The NLC podcast, of course, comes out every week on Sundays on the NLSC, which is nba-live.com. We're also on various podcatching apps and platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Stitcher. On those platforms, search for NLC Podcast, look for our logo, and that will be us. On the platforms that allow you to leave a review, we hope you will consider leaving us one, hopefully a positive one, and enjoying the show. And as always, Derek, we turn the discussion now over to our faithful listeners. And as always, it's great to hear from them. But let us know what you thought about this week's topics.
Yeah, you know, Andrew started uploading to YouTube. So those shows, a lot of them are being uploaded to YouTube. So definitely, if you want to go on there, and if you feel more comfortable on there, you know, leaving comments and whatnot, you know, give the video a like, and leave us some feedback if you get the chance.
Good looking out. I forgot to mention that as of last week, we're uploading to YouTube as well. But yes, that of course is youtube.com/NBA Live. Series Center is our YouTube channel. Of course, I've been uploading some other videos, including the Vince Carter getting booed video. That was a fun one to do, Derek.
Right, and you also did that's a great video. But as far as like the podcast goes, you know, you uploaded the Tim Kitro interview
Oh
as
yes,
well. And
one of my
that was a
favorite
great
episodes.
interview.
Yeah, yes, that was
Yeah, and
definitely fun to do. Yeah, that's why I bring it
yeah,
up a
so
lot.
definitely go on there and listen if you haven't.
Before I get into our other socials and whatnot, where can we find you, Derek?
You can find me on Twitter at D for 384, on the NLSC D for 3, and on YouTube D for 3 as well. My podcast, Holding Court with D for 3, is kicking off on August 17th, and it will feature Andrew Begley, who's going to be my first guest. So that's going to be pretty exciting. So if you like listening to this podcast on basketball gaming, you'll like listening to my Real Hoop podcast as well, because it will just be Andrew and I again. So it'll be good times.
We'll be flipping roles. You'll be bringing the ball up. I'll be playing off ball.
Right, exactly. So basically, I'll be Magic Johnson and you'll be James Worthy in this case. So.
I like the
Not a
comparison.
bad thing. James Worthy is great.
I like the comparison. Yes, it's very flattering. Yes, you can find me on Twitter at AndrewNLSC, where I post my various thoughts on basketball, gaming, real basketball, and other things that I am into. You can also find the NLSC on social media. Invite you to connect with us there on Twitter and Facebook. We are the NLSC. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. As I said, on YouTube, we are NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week. Thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.